Thanks for being with us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, migrant workers are an integral part of our agriculture sector here in the state, and we're going to talk about their experiences here and look at how the corona pandemic is affecting their lives with a couple of guests. Loka Weiss Ottesen is an immigration attorney, a partner at the DeWitt Law Firm. She works with clients on family-based and individual immigration applications, as well as employment visas. Loka, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me on your show.
We also have with us Rod Richardson. He is a spokesperson for UMOS, which is United Migrant Opportunity Services. The organization provides workforce development and social services to individuals and families who face barriers to finding and keeping stable employment. And Rod Richardson, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning, Larry. Thank you for having us.
So as you listen to our two guest experts, do you employ migrant workers, perhaps? What's your experience been? Or maybe you are a migrant worker. What's life and work like in Wisconsin? How's the pandemic affected the work you do? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Look, the term migrant worker is, I think, often used pretty loosely. Could you clarify the definition?
Right. And I guess in non-legal terms or in non-legal circles, I have heard the term as migrant worker be used in general to many foreign workers, regardless of the industry. What we usually do use it for is for individuals who are not able to return to their home on a day-to-day basis when they move around on their job. So, you know, the migrant term, basically, they're migrating away from their home to go to work, and we're not talking commuting distance. So it's usually individuals who leave their home geographical area to migrate to other areas to perform work for predetermined periods of times, usually seasonal.
Yeah. Are they typically or generally documented or undocumented?
That's a really good question. If you look at it at the definition on the books, then we are talking documented workers, and those are usually those that have that are eligible for the H-2A agricultural seasonal visas. There are some seasonal non-agricultural workers that would be eligible for the H-2B. But loosely speaking, migrant workers are also sometimes referring to undocumented workers who move around throughout the year to find jobs on farms or other seasonal industries.
Rod, how heavily do farms and food processors in Wisconsin rely on migrant workers? How many migrant workers are in the state?
In the state currently, according to the numbers provided by the Department of Workforce Development, there are over 4,000 migrant workers in the state of Wisconsin. From those who we work with, most of the workers travel from Florida and from South Texas to come to Wisconsin to work in the agricultural food processing industry.
And they are a critical part of our agriculture, are they not?
In our opinion, yes, they are. Without the migrant workers, the food supply chain would not flow as smoothly as consumers expect. And again, the reason that migrant workers are here is because the local agriculture employers cannot find local help to do the work. That's why the migrant workers are here, and yes, they are an integral part of Wisconsin's workforce, and certainly an integral part, specifically within the agricultural and agricultural industry.
Yeah. But what kind of journey have Wisconsin's migrant workers made to actually get here?
Well, again, they are committed to working, and again, they travel for those who you most works with. About 20% of the migrant workers travel from Florida, and about 79% or so are here from South Texas, and about 1% come from other states. So they travel great distances to work and provide for their families.
Loka, you work with people on immigration applications, employment visas. What's that process like?
Well, it depends on the type of visa. If you're talking about the H-2A process, that depending on whether the employee or prospective employee is already in the United States or not, that process could easily involve three or four agencies, federal agencies, and the state workforce agency as well. So it's an insanely bureaucratic process. It is very technical. It is very strict in terms of timeline, how many days in advance you can do certain things, how many things you can't. And then COVID hit. So that complicated things even more.
Yeah, and in what ways?
Well, the timing of this was very unfortunate because COVID hit the United States right as the agricultural H-2A season was starting. So by March 20th, the U.S. consulates all over the world had pretty much suspended routine visa services. So we had, you know, we saw a lot of employers in the United States who had initiated the process to bring over employees and had gone through the hoops of filing the job order with the state workforce agency and getting that certified, and then filing the labor certification with the Federal Department of Labor and getting that certified, and then filing the petition with the U.S. Immigration Services, getting that approved, only for their employees at the last stage of the process to get stuck abroad because now the consulates were shut down and were no longer accepting visa interviews. A few days into this, consulates, after the Department of State had declared that H-2A visas are mission critical, the consulates did resume processing H-2A visas. First, they prioritized individuals who had had H-2A visas before and had already been vetted through the system, and they were now at the renewal process. And for those, they implemented an interview waiver process so that they could still keep the consulates shut down for routine in-person services, but keep trying to get these visas through the motions to get the people here. But it's still a work in progress because, you know, the data on the virus changes, the spikes in each region change, and we have to basically just go with the flow.
Yeah. And these workers don't necessarily come straight to Wisconsin. They may start in Texas and kind of work their way north.
Right.
As the seasons change, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. That's right. We could see agricultural workers start in the south where, you know, their farming seasons are earlier in the year, and then spend 2-3 months there and then have another petition by another farm up north that basically ports their H-2A status to a new employer. And that's, in fact, one of the changes that we have seen. Up until COVID, for an employee to move from one farm to the next based on an H-2A visa, they would not be able to start working for the new farm until the farm had completed the sponsorship process and all the steps had been approved by every agency, with some minor exceptions. Because of COVID, in order to minimize the disruption of the food supply chain, the federal government issued an exception allowing employees to move from one employer to the next while the last stage in the application process was pending. And that would have minimized the interruption between their work authorization.
Mm-hmm. And what type of, and we're talking about migrant work here, but is it, is what crops are typically involved or what livestock?
If I may.
Rod, go ahead.
Yes. In terms of the crops that the migrant workers assist with, ranges from apples, cabbage, carrots, corn, cucumbers, onions, peppers, beans, peas, pickles, and strawberries, to name a few.
to name a few. And some, and do some work in the dairy industry?
No. Well, it depends on which kind of migrant workers you're talking about. The H-2A visa, which is the most typical visa for migrant workers in the agricultural field, as a general rule, does not actually apply to the dairy industry. And that is because the H-2A, one of the main requirements for the H-2A visa is for the employer to show that the need for those workers is seasonal. And because the dairy industry is a year-round industry, not a seasonal industry, the H-2A generally does not apply. And in fact, this is one of the hardest things that dairy farmers have to contend with, because technically there's actually no U.S. visa on the books that applies to unskilled dairy farm labor.
Hmm. And yet there are some migrants, if I'm not mistaken, that work in farms.
There are. There are. Some of them are undocumented. Some of them are skilled workers. So there is, based on the, what used to be the NAFTA agreement, NAFTA was actually replaced on July 1st, just a couple of weeks ago, by the U.S., Mexico, and Canada trade agreement. There is a list of occupations for what is deemed a professional occupation that would qualify individuals to go work in dairy farms. And those occupations are dairy scientist, animal breeder. For those, though, those are occupations that generally require a higher degree. And a lot of these folks will have a degree in veterinary medicine or animal science or dairy science or something along those lines. And they are supposed to be working in higher paid professional occupations, such as an animal breeder or an animal scientist.
And here we are. We're kind of coming up to time, but there's a lot more we can follow up with on that with our two guests, Loka Vice Otteson, immigration attorney and partner in the DeWitt Law Firm, Rod Richardson, is our guest as well, spokesperson for UMOS, which is United Migrant Opportunity Services. It provides workforce development, child development, social services to individuals and families who face barriers to finding and keeping stable employment. We're going to continue our conversation with them. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we will be back with our guests. So you stay with us. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Today we're talking about migrant workers in Wisconsin with our two guests. Loka Vice Otteson is an immigration attorney and partner at the DeWitt Law Firm. Rod Richardson is a spokesperson for UMOS, which is United Migrant Opportunity Services. So, questions for them. Maybe you employ migrant workers. How crucial are they to your operation? How's the COVID-19 affecting them? Give a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Rod Richardson, what is the concern, or are there concerns about how the pandemic is affecting migrant workers? Talk about the conditions that they typically live and work in.
Okay. First of all, the work that migrant farm workers do, first of all, is hard. It is plain and simple. It's hard work. It is long hours, 10, 12, 14 hours a day, sometimes six, sometimes 7 days a week. But it's long, long hours, hard work, and low pay. And now the COVID-19 factor is an added stress in that, imagine that you as a migrant worker have been deemed as an essential worker. You are essential to the function of the food supply chain, yet the treatment of you being an essential worker does not match up with the importance of what migrant farm workers do. So just think that every day when you go to work, you could possibly be putting your own personal health and safety at risk, as well as your family when you return home. That is that COVID-19 has added a tremendous amount of stress to farm workers as they try to do their part in keeping the food supply flowing.
And Governor Evers issued an order for employers to protect their migrant workers from COVID-19. How have the employers responded?
Yes, that is correct. Back in April, the governor issued an emergency order number 25, and in that order, it specifies that farm owners and managers, especially those who provide housing for migrant workers, must implement plans to prevent exposure to COVID-19. That order expired, I believe, the latter part of May, 1st of June. But since then, the Department of Workforce Development, who oversees migrant worker rules and laws, issued an extension of the governor's order. It's called Emergency Rule 2014. And in that rule, it does specify that employers must provide separate isolated living spaces to workers who are exhibiting COVID-19 symptoms. Employers must daily infect high-touch areas, especially within toilet rooms, bathing, laundry, hand washing, and so forth. Those employers who provide housing, particularly for H-2A workers, provide reasonable spaces between beds. So, yes, there are rules and mandates that have been set forth, and it has been a challenge for not only the farm workers, but more so for the employers to comply with those mandates. And the State Department of Workforce Development has migrant labor inspectors whose job is to visit the migrant labor camps to make sure that those rules are being adhered to.
Yeah. And what the housing itself, so there would be many people housed inside the same building?
In some cases, yes. But again, due to COVID-19, since the beds must be spaced at least six feet apart, that means now a housing barrack, let's say, that may have housed 20 workers may now only be able to house 10. So therefore, that employer has to make arrangements, accommodations for those additional workers. And a lot of times, employers are using motel rooms to house their workers.
No. If work, Loka, if workers feel that their employer maybe isn't following safety protocols, what rights do they have? What actions can they take?
Yeah, they could file complaints to the Department of Labor and report violations. And it is unfortunately not unusual for violations to occur, whether intentionally or unintentionally. Especially in times like these, one of the requirements for the H-2A, for instance, for the immigrant workers, is that the farmers must actually provide housing for free. So when they're limited to how many people they can house in the accommodations that they already build, and, you know, the barracks or the farmhouses, and they have to resort to motels, just like Rod mentioned, then their costs are so much higher. And I personally expect that we're going to see a lot of violations there, where some farmers can't afford costs, and they may try to pass down some of those costs to the employees, and they're not supposed to do that.
No. Go ahead, Rod.
Yeah, there are some employers who are offering their workers extra pay for those workers who normally would be have been provided housing, now must find housing on their own. And since the work that migrants do is, you know, more seasonal, landlords usually, you know, like for the tenants to sign a lease for 9, 10, 12, you know, 12 months a year. And since migrant workers are only here for a few months, it makes housing is always a challenge for migrant workers to find safe and affordable housing.
Yeah.
And with COVID-19, it presents even additional challenges.
We had a comment from Vern, who couldn't stay in line. He wanted to point out how important proper ventilation is right now in protecting folks who share indoor spaces. Is there any regulation on this for migrant worker housing in terms of ventilation?
To my knowledge, there are no requirements. I know that they're in the meatpacking industry, which is really going through many challenges. Air filtration studies are being done to address the issue of air quality. But to my knowledge, there are no requirements in the state in terms of housing air quality.
And Rod, I think it was in April, maybe, your organization filed a complaint with the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development against a processing plant, a bird's eye plant in Darien. What happened there?
Yes. Based on the allegations that that were communicated to us from the workers, based on those allegations, since UMOS does not have any legal authority, our course of action was to file a complaint with the Department of Workforce Development, as well as with OSHA, to have an independent entity do an investigation to determine if those allegations are true or not. So far, we got a response from the Department of Workforce Development. They did send out an inspector, and the one violation that was found was the code states that only two people could sleep in one of the trailer provided housing. The inspector found three, so that was a violation of the code. We have received a letter from OSHA indicating that they have received our complaint, but we have not received anything saying that they have actually done their own investigation.
Mm-hmm. Do the workers do they sometimes bring families or family members with them, or are they
sometimes? Yes, for the immigrant workers. The H-2A visa does provide for a derivative visa. It's the H-4, and they can bring spouses and minor children with them. The majority of the immigrant migrant workers, in my experience, do not bring their families, but some of them do.
I would think it'd be tough, and especially for bringing along the kids, the children, because then there may be a school, education kind of issue involved.
Right, and this is one of the challenges in filling these positions now, too, because schools are closed.
Now, that is one of the reasons that UMOS provides housing for families. So they are in individual apartment units that are geared for those workers who wish to bring their families with them. UMOS also provides migrant child care and migrant Head Start so that the children still have a safe place to go, as well as there is an educational component while their mom and dad are at work.
Yeah, I would think that would be different. How are you funded, Rod? How's your funding?
The funding for our migrant programs are through the Federal Department of Labor, as well as through the Department of Education. And some funding is also comes from the Department of Health Services.
I wondered about that because, the governor just announced a $250 million cut across state agencies, and I wondered if that sort of funding issue has been a problem for organizations like UMOS.
It has, so far it has not been, a problem for UMOS, but because of the governor's order yesterday, we certainly will be keeping an eye on that.
Look, let's talk about undocumented migrant workers for a minute. Migrant workers are essential for the undocumented migrant workers. What does that mean for their status in Wisconsin and the U.S.?
It is estimated that about half of the farm workers are undocumented workers. So they are as essential to this country's food chain supply as those that are documented. What does this mean to their immigration status? Usually not a whole lot. If you're here undocumented, for the most part, you cannot legalize your status through work. There are a lot of immigration bars that apply, and if you came here undocumented altogether without a valid visa, most of the times you're not able to legalize your status inside of the United States. You have to leave the U.S. and apply at a consulate abroad, which poses a big problem because if you spend more than 1 year undocumented in the United States, the minute you set foot outside of the country, even if it's to go to the consulate to legalize your status, you automatically trigger a 10-year bar from being readmitted. So the fact that they are now in the middle of an essential worker industry is absolutely amazing that they are risking their lives, but they are not going to be able to benefit from this to be able to legalize their status, unfortunately.
Oh. Let's take another call. Craig in Gays Mills, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I grow apples here in Gays Mills, and we employ migrants to pick apples, and we also have H-2A employees to pack apples on our grading line. And as this felt, your guests are kind of misrepresenting them as low-paid. The H-2A minimum wage in Wisconsin right now is right around $14 an hour, so that's pretty good. And then anybody doing those jobs along, or local people doing those jobs alongside the H-2A employees also get that wage. So everybody here has pretty much gotten a huge pay bump due to them. And our pickers, we don't use H-2A out there, but we do use all documented migrants that come about 30 or so, and they work piece rate pay. And most of them guys, as they go, they're making anywhere from 15 to 40 bucks an hour doing that. Just depends on how well motivated a worker they are. So classifying them as low paid is kind of a low blow to the farmers that rely on these guys to do their work.
Yeah. Craig, thank you for calling. Comment, Rod.
Yes. Historically, yes, H-2A workers do make a little bit more than the, I'll say, regular migrant workers, but migrant workers historically and today are still among the lowest paid workers that there are in this country. And by the fact that it is seasonal work, it is hard to make for them to make ends meet year-round.
And, Rod, Craig, thank you again for calling. Appreciate your call. Look, are there other legal issues migrant workers face that we ought to know about?
There are a lot of legal issues that they face. Not all of them are eligible to get the visas to begin with. And it depends on a litany of things, anywhere from their immigration history, whether they had visa denials in the past or not. Sometimes the employer's petitions don't get approved. The migrant worker visa program is, for the most part, driven by the petitioner, and that is the employer. So the employer has to initiate the process, and the process can fail at any one of the three or four stages. And because it also involves multiple federal agencies and the fact that not one agency is obligated to honor the approval of the other two or three, again, it creates a lot of uncertainty, and there's no telling if that person at the end of that process will be able to get here.
Wow. How would you, Rod, you were going to add something there?
No.
Okay, I wanted to look at how would you like to see the future unfold for migrant workers in the state, and how do we get there?
That's a really good question. Unfortunately, it is not something that can be fully regulated at the state level. If we're talking about the immigrant component of the migrant workers, that is regulated primarily at the federal level, as most immigration-related things are. So it's not just a matter of how it would look like in our state. It would have to be a complete revamp of what it would look like for the entire country. And that is something that only Congress can work on, if they can work on it.
And Rod, what about you? What would you like to see the future unfold for migrant workers in the state?
Not only migrant workers in the state, but throughout the country, in that there seem to be two systems, one for regular workers and one for migrant workers. The pay scale of regular workers and migrant workers seem to be different. Housing standards for regular folks, in that way, versus migrant workers, is different. So like to see the standards be the same for all segments of the populations. And if we can appreciate, we do appreciate our essential healthcare workers, our essential frontline workers, we also need to appreciate, understand, and support the migrant workers who keep our food supply chain flowing.
Yeah, without them, this could have a big impact, I would think, on food production here in the state. Rod.
Due to COVID-19, it did create some delays in the production. And therefore, I'm told that some of those delays has created some higher prices at the grocery store. So it's an issue that needs to be dealt with in a serious fashion.
Yeah, it doesn't indeed. Well, I want to thank you both very much for taking time to be with us today. It's a pleasure to be able to talk with you, and I'm There obviously there's a lot of issues, and there's a lot of paperwork and a lot of effort that has to go in on the part of everybody to make sure that we have people here to do the work that needs to be done to keep our food supply going and do it in such a way that people's rights are honored. I want to thank you both for being with us today, Loka and Rod. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Yes, thank you.
Loka Weiss-Adesan is an immigration attorney, a partner in the DeWitt Law Firm. She works with clients on family-based and individual immigration applications as well as application visas. Rod Richardson, a spokesperson for UMOS, which is a United Migrant Opportunity Services. Great to have both of them with us. And certainly great to have you with us as well. I really appreciate you spending the time with us today. Boy, it's Friday already, coming up tomorrow, and we've got Garden Talk, as always, on a Friday. Lisa Johnson talking about the perennial successes and challenges of summer gardening in the state. Well, thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.